Welcome to CompTIA Shark Bites with Alan Shark, Vice President, Public Sector, and Executive Director of CompTIA's Public Technology Institute, where we explore tech leadership in the public sector.
Hi, everyone. Alan Shark here, and welcome to another episode of Shark Bites. October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and so that has been our constant theme throughout. And so we are very fortunate to have James Pakanowski, who is a graduate of our CGCO program, who is a network administrator for Ventnor City, New Jersey. Welcome, Jim.
Oh, thank you, Alan. Good to be here.
Jim, you have an impressive background and you hold a unique position that I want to get into. You're a graduate of Syracuse University, where you majored in civil and aerospace engineering, and you were hired by the city of Ventnor in 2003. That's significant because you've been there some 19 years. Yes. So you have an amazing sense of history. You've earned your certification in Certified Government Chief Information Officer from us. You are MCP Microsoft certified. You are Microsoft Office certified master instructor. You have the A+ certified network technician certification. You have a CCNA certificate for Cisco Networks. The list goes on. You also have a Security Plus certificate. And you also serve as a president of the Ventnor City Board of Education. And you've been an active member of the Knights of Columbus. And again, you've been with the city for 19 years. So as I understand it, Ventnor City in New Jersey is outside of Atlantic City. You're in Atlantic County. And you have a population, I believe, of just over 22,000 people.
Actually, it's more like somewhere between 10 and 12,000 year round. During the summer, we go up somewhere to between 40 and 50,000.
Okay, so it's quite a variation there. Thank you. And when I saw Ventnor City, it kind of raised a flag. I said, gee, I remember playing Monopoly, and if I'm not mistaken, that was one of the yellow property cards. So
yes,
is there a connection between that and the game of Monopoly that many of us are familiar with?
Actually, yes, there is. The entire game is based and formulated on the entire Atlantic City, Ventnor, and Margate area. All of the different streets and different areas within it are actual streets in these three areas. And in fact, we have a plaque from Milton Bradley sitting on our mayor's office door, because Milton Bradley actually spelled Ventnor incorrect for a very long time. They spelled it V-E-N-T-N-E-R instead of N-O-R. So they actually apologized and corrected it within the game some years ago.
What an interesting story. I'm glad I mentioned that. We always begin these podcasts with how you got involved. You have a fascinating background and a great sense of history for the city and the state of New Jersey. But as a teenager, how did your interest in technology begin, nourish, grow? How did it all come about?
It actually started while I was in high school. I took my first computer training course while I was in high school on an old 64, one of the old, not Apple, but
Commodore
64 computers, yes. And I learned BASIC at that time. A friend of mine was going to college for computers, and he showed me a number of different ways to program stuff that nobody else within our high school could do. And it just got me very interested in it. And even, you know, through my college days and everything, I enjoyed computers. And actually what was very, very interesting is not as much into the teenage years, but in some of my years before I started here at Ventnor, in 1995, I lived in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And, you know, I wanted to get my own computer. I found a shop that had one, went in, said, I want a computer. He's like, okay, here, take this. Took it home after a couple of weeks. I said, nah, this isn't what I want. Took it back, got an upgrade. Did that like twice. And finally, I was watching the guy and said, I can do this myself. There was a, you know, farmer's market that sold computer parts. And I built my first computer right then and there. And from there, I just took off with the computer business and the computer interest.
But you go on to Syracuse University, you majored in civil and aerospace engineering. So How did you blast off into space and wind up then in local government?
Well, some things didn't exactly work out. Civil engineering, my father was more into that. I really wasn't. The aerospace engineering end of it didn't exactly work out. And I ended up spending a number of years in retail management. I was a store manager for Bradley's department store for a number of years, and they went out of business. Once they went out of business, I then said, well, where's my passion? What do I want to do? You know, I went to some additional schooling for computers, and from there, spent some time at a computer training company. And then from there was hired here at Bettner as their network administrator and built it from there and just enjoyed every minute of it from that point on.
So it was really something you applied for and you didn't really know what you were getting into when it came to public sector. Is that accurate?
No, not at all. Because when I first walked into this, my office was down in the basement, no air conditioning, below the men's room. It was an old rickety table that had two servers sitting on it, and that was it. And I had to build it up from that point.
What an amazing story. So tell me, how many staff do you have?
The city has a staff of about 250 people. I manage probably about 150 of those, because a number of those are public works and, you know, fire department people that don't really have computer access as much, but I'd probably say about 150 end users I manage.
But your staff yourself, how many people aside from yourself do what you do?
I am the entire staff for the city to deal with all ends, police, fire, public works, and all of our remote locations.
That's what I wanted to extract from you. So you are, the title that you have is so misleading. Is that more bureaucratic? I mean, you're the chief information officer. You're the chief security information officer. You're the chief data officer. Every chief, you have that responsibility.
That's correct. My title is a civil service title only. I have all of the other roles and parts because New Jersey Civil Service really doesn't have any of those other titles. It only has four or five total titles, from technician to network administrator, and that's it.
So, you know, it's unfortunate because you're not alone in that situation. I certainly understand the need for civil service categories. I mean, that's one thing. I don't want to take that on. But I do find it frustrating and pretty much unacceptable not to provide people like you with working titles that is separate and apart for classifications. And I know many states and many localities don't permit that. And So, you know, I understand the civil service, you need to have those classifications. It could be numeric, it could be title, but that is so misleading if I was somebody on the outside, not knowing the enormous role that you play.
Yeah, it's difficult because I wear so many hats, but when, you know, you talk to different people, it's sort of like, well, this is your title. Isn't that what you do? I said, no. I said, I do that, but I, you know, do it. And actually, but's not the correct word. We learned at our GMIS meets, it should not be but, it should be and. I have all these titles and I have additional. And now with our JIF and our Joint Insurance Fund and all of these cybersecurity things that are increasing, I've now added Chief Security Officer onto it as well, because it is my job to ensure that, you know, the city is secure as well as, you know, able to do their jobs.
We've had a number of people come through our program, Jim, that have been similar to you. We had somebody who is running IT out of the fire department for Toms River, New Jersey. We've had a number of really good people. And there are many localities in New Jersey and Massachusetts and Pennsylvania that have similar situations, small jurisdictions, relatively small full-time populations compared to what might happen during the tourist season. How are you able to sleep at night with all the increasing cyber threats that are out there?
Very difficult, let's say. It's, you know, it as more and more things happen, it is becoming harder and harder for a one-man show to really do the job that's needed. And, you know, and I have to feel for the towns that don't even have anyone. There's a lot of towns in this, you know, in this state, and I'm sure many other states, that the towns outsource it to consultants. And those consultants don't necessarily know or have the expertise for the cyber end of it. And the insurance end is getting harder and harder every single day. I mean, I go home and I'm constantly, you know, thinking about stuff. I'm looking at, you know, what I see, what do I need to do tomorrow? What do I need to do next week in order to keep us secure? And it's becoming progressively more difficult.
I assume because you're a one person operation, you have lifetime employment.
So, I mean, well, I can only hope that far, but you know, you never know. You never know, you know, where it's going to go, what the political landscape, you know, is going to be, you know, on where everything is. Do I hope my job is secure? Yes, absolutely. But you never know in today's day and age, unfortunately.
That's true. And are you able to, I mean, do you have funds where you can outsource certain functionality as opposed to, because obviously you probably have argued for other headcount and probably the budget doesn't support that given size, but are you able to outsource any of the operations that you have under your belt?
Yes and no. What I do is I do have a number of consultants that I have in place that will assist me with, you know, the programming of my firewalls, helping me to monitor, you know, all of my logs or all of the, you know, backups or all of that type of thing. So I have over the last couple of years brought on a couple of different consultants to help with those things. But the biggest thing that, you know, that I, and I'm sure a lot of other small towns need is the help with the day-to-day type of things. So that we can concentrate on whether it be the projects or the cyber threats or everything, because it just keeps, you know, every day you never know. And I get 20, 30, 40 emails a day from users. Is this email okay? Can I go into this? Is this good? Is this bad? And then, you know, I have to do my analysis and say yes, no, or maybe.
And you want to encourage that behavior. So you're kind of trapped in best practices.
Actually, it's been very, very good, because I will say, and I'm very proud of this, our joint insurance fund does weekly phishing tests with us and does at least right now twice a year penetration testing. My last penetration testing, I came with almost 100% satisfaction. They found one firewall that was missing an update. That was the only thing that they were able to find. They were not able to get in. And I have probably about 95 to 96% satisfaction rating on the phishing. So I'm very happy with my people. You know, let them continue to send me those emails, make those phone calls, because that in one way, shape, or form makes my job a lot easier.
You alluded to your insurance fund in New Jersey. That's kind of a muni fund. Is that correct?
Yes. It's a joint municipal fund that handles all of our cyber insurance. And they have actually come up with a three-tier checklist.
Mm-hmm. I was going to get to that. Yes, yeah. I'm aware of that. But why don't you share that with our listeners?
Yeah, we have a three-tier checklist that starts with the basic things that you should have, whether it be patching, passwords, all what we IT people consider the simple basic things. Then they get into tier two, which starts into multi-factor authentication, penetration testing, you know, and stuff like that. And then the third tier, you know, is the high end of things like network segmentation, you know, and things like that. And each one of those tiers will help you to reduce your cyber liability and your copays or deductibles if you do happen to have a cyber attack, which we did have in 2016, and that absolutely helped us.
So, but these three tiers go more than just a rating. They actually reduce your premium somewhat, don't they, in terms of deductibility? That's like a real incentive.
Yep. Once you hit tier one, your deductible and your rates, you know, drop so much. Tier two, a little bit more. Tier three, you know, a little bit more.
And it's a win-win. I'm surprised more insurance groups don't do that, because it gives you an incentive. It gives you specific things to do, to strive for, which only leads to the more security of your local government. But on the same token, for the insurance folks in their risk pool, they see it as lessening their exposure. So to me, it's a perfect partnership. It's well-balanced, and it should be, I think, emulated across the country.
And I absolutely agree with that. And that's, in fact, that was one of the things I was thinking about is, you know, as I look at other entities, whether it be the police department, the fire department, you know, our clerks, building department, they have, whether it be state or national regulations. I don't see that in IT. It's sort of all over the board. You know, there's a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but we don't have those definitive regulations all the way around. And that tends to cause problems when you start looking at budgets, because we can sit there and say, yes, we should have A, B, and C, but there's not that regulation that tells us you have to have these things. So whether, you know, we want to have it to secure it, sometimes the funds aren't there because that type of regulation is not in place.
Yeah, in many ways, some of the agencies have punted. They give you frameworks instead. And so it's like then you're free to interpret as you need. And some people argue for that. Some people would prefer to have that flexibility. And that assumes that they have the resources to do what's necessary and the understanding, but that isn't always the case.
Yeah, that makes it difficult, especially with a lot of vendors that we work with. And now in the days where cloud platforms are becoming more and more mainstay, it's very difficult when those vendors don't put things like multi-factor authentication in place or don't put some of the security in place because they don't necessarily have to, but that our insurance checklist says you have to have multi-factor. Well, if our vendor doesn't have it and they're not going to put it in place, now we're sort of caught between a rock and a hard place as to, you know, which directions we can go or what we can do.
So in New Jersey, there are smaller jurisdictions like yours. Yours is more is the common denominator. I mean, there are just so many small operations in the state. How do you keep in touch with each other? Because I think we always talk about the value of peer networks at CompTIA. We're talking about community and engagement. You're kind of one of the better states in terms of you have a fairly active group. Is that correct?
Yes, we do. We have a state chapter of GMIS International. Our New Jersey chapter probably is I believe second or third within the country in regards to size. We have probably a little over 100 people. Unfortunately, we'd like to have a lot more, and our membership group is really working on that because we do have over 526 municipalities, you know, within the state. But we utilize our listserv on both the international and the state level in order to communicate with each other. And it does wonders. I mean, there are lots of things that I look at or other people look at and say, how did you handle this? How did you handle that? And it gives you a great sounding block to be able to work with people.
And I can see that. I've actually spoken before your group over the years. So we now are sitting here, Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and just before the month began, just the other week, the CISA announced their grant program. Even though the legislation was passed in November of last year, we waited all this time to find that we still have phase one, which requires planning. And to me, why did we wait a year to find out we just have to plan? But it's not we. In this case, it is the states that right. have to come up with plans first. And $1 billion sounds like a lot. The good news is it's $1 billion. It's the first ever consolidated grant program targeting local governments. 80% of that billion is supposed to go for local, but 25% of that is to go for rural cyber in the various states. Every state has to come up with their own way of applying for whatever it is that they deem to be the priorities based on the plan that they have to yet to create. So two things. Are you in touch with the folks at the state level to kind of weigh in so that they understand? Because very often there's been this big divide of understanding, not desire, but understanding of the needs of communities like yours versus the state agencies that typically have not had the strongest relationship with local governments.
Unfortunately, no. I've had no contact, you know, with the state. The state sort of does it on their own. And then if we get any information on it, we do. In fact, when everybody was talking about all the CARES funding and stuff, I never saw $1 of it because that funding was funneled down through a plan from the state and was utilized for payroll or other things. So IT never saw any of that CARES funding, you know, within my entity. I'm not sure about, you know, any others. And, you know, I've heard lots about, you know, this new set of stuff, but there's been no communication from the state down to us in regards to it.
It's so frustrating. So I'm assuming that you have a shopping list always in your hip pocket of things that if you ever got that call or you saw something, what would be your top 3 to 5 priorities if you had the funding that you would like to see?
Well, you know, I would absolutely like, you know, staffing is going to be number one, obviously, but that's not going to be, you know, a part of it. Trying to do a lot better with securing our data storage would probably be number one. Number two would be a much stronger backup system. You know, with minimal funding, you have to do what you can do. And then, you know, the third thing would probably be, you know, whether it be network switches or, you know, that type of thing to be a little more secure than what we have would probably be the top three things, because from there you can lock down most anything.
So I don't want to put you out of a job, but at looking down the horizon, say 5 years from now, with every year the threats becoming more challenging, the demands on an individual's time more challenging, you can only do so much. And you've voiced both you would love what you do, but there's also frustration there. In 5 years, is it still feasible to run a city with just one person in IT?
No, absolutely not. You need somebody, number one, you need someone that's going to be able to look at the police departments on its own, because they have a whole level of security and requirements that, you know, is over and above what we have. And then number two, you really got to have somebody who's going to be able to look at the security end of it, and then somebody who's going to be able to look at just the network end of it. Now, the security end, you could potentially do a shared service, but then you get into politics, you know, when you start looking at a lot of that. But, you know, really, you know, the security end, you have to have someone that's looking at that every single day, and a one-man shop can't do that.
So the city is blessed to have someone with you. You have 19 years of history behind you. When at some point in time, when you leave, you're taking 19 or 20 or 23 years of experience out the door. I mean, can the city fill your shoes? I mean, I don't want to, you know, overplay the role that you've played, but how do they replace 19 years of?
I don't think you can do that in today's day and age with one person. And I don't think you can do it with just a consulting firm. You really have to have somebody who is in here, who knows the people, who knows what, you know, what is going on in order to do it. I'm hoping, you know, and that between now and when I do decide to retire, that I will be able to have somebody in here for a significant amount of time that I'll be able to, you know, mold and, you know, work with in order to, you know, show them, you know, where things need to go so that I can feel comfortable leaving. I always remember this one thing, and it's always stuck with me from back in my days when I worked as a retail manager for both Ames Department Store and Bradley's Department Store. And they said, the greatest manager is always the one that can walk away and your store can run at the same peak level, whether you're there or whether you're not there. And that's the same thing here. So I brought a lot of my management experience, you know, from that, you know, to here. And it's the same thing. You need to have that comfort level so that when I'm not in this building or when I'm not here, it can run at that same level.
Jim, we're going to leave it there, but thank you. That is really good advice. And I agree with that in so many ways. We've been listening to James Pekanowski, who is the network manager of Ventnor City in New Jersey. But that's misleading because he's a CIO, CISO, data officers. Every chief is a hat that you wear.
Thank you.
Jim, we look forward to seeing you in person. We value your membership and your activity with CompTIA PTI.
Great. Glad I could be here. Glad we could spend some time together.
Thanks.
This has been a production of the CompTIA Public Technology Institute. To learn more, visit connect.comptia.org and search public sector.